Do you think that in the age of Google that it's easier for someone like you who 25 years ago they'd see this mix of Spanish and English and say, what the fuck is this? But now if they're really interested in your work or have some sense that there's some value in it for them, you can just go on Google and see, translate entidades into English and come up with entities.
Yeah, I never thought about that. I guess that could work. But and sometimes there are people that, like editors, that say, well, what is this? And there are other editors that say, this is fabulous. And there are other editors that say, or other readers that say, well, how am I supposed to understand this? However you want to. I'm not going to get in the way. That's what it is. Look it up.
There's a thing called Google, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, this book, self-published, many, many chapbooks self-published. One book that I've seen since I've known you, published by a small, obscure press, and,
you know. Several. Mostly, Wild Embers, Antoinette, Mouthfield Press of El Paso, did two.
Mm-hmm.
So three by different presses. And this one by me.
You self-publish a lot of your work.
Well, yeah, all the chapbooks I self-publish. So I've got about 20 of those.
So you see all these chapbooks being put in a substantial book by a major publisher?
Well, that's what Antoinette did. She put four or five chapbooks into
Lost in the Chamisa.
Yeah. And then Maria Maloney put three chapbooks into Spider Road. And then she also published just the single chapbook, Cuyamungue. And this is three chapbooks. So, that's like eight of them. Eight chapbooks in the three feature books.
That's a lot of work.
So that's almost half of it.
Yeah.
And all the rest. Somebody's talking about doing them all individually as chapbooks with ISBNs and a publication.
Yeah. If it happens, it happens. Yeah,
it's going to happen.
It's going to happen.
Yeah.
You know, this discussion about publishing and self-publishing and that leads me to the quote that Michael McClure likes to use in that Clifford Still gave originally, and that is, demands for communication are presumptuous and irrelevant. And on some level, you must relate to that.
Yeah.
Explain.
Like I give a fuck. I mean, I went through the standard process of academic publishing, and it was extremely frustrating, demeaning. I went through it as long as I could, and then I made a decision. I'm not going to worry about these guys deciding if they're going to publish me or not. And I did that in like mid-90s. Because I was being held up for like two or three years by I think I was at Artesano Press out of Texas. Anyway.
Coming back with stuff like, you can't use entidades.
No. They weren't doing that. They were just saying, well, we can't publish it right now. We're holding on to it. And so I would let that influence me instead of saying, well, go ahead with your own stuff. And it was a psychological obstacle. It was an artistic obstacle. And I decided to do away with it. And not worry about whether some publishing house is going to figure it out. He's publishable. I've been published all over the place. And half the time I never asked for it.
The term that you use for people who do engage in careerism is positioners.
Yeah.
So that's something you want to avoid at all costs.
Well, positioners I see as people who aren't really interested in the work. They're interested in being recognized as a quote-unquote poet rather than being interested in doing the work of the poet. And Sam has a real same kind of attitude. He's very much, you know, you're doing the work. You know, don't be worried about who's publishing you and when they're publishing you and all that. I have the same attitude. I'm just doing the work. I've always been doing the work. That's my interest, is doing the work. So these are becoming more easier for me to do because I'm more familiar with the process now. So I used to do everything by hand. The whole book was handmade. The whole chapbooks, all the chapbooks I've been ever distributing were all handmade. I made every page. I numbered every page. I put it all together, stapled them together.
You know, you are of indigenous heritage. You mentioned the Yaqui and Tarahumara, and the sense of place that we get from reading your work is just pure northern New Mexico. How important is, do you think, a sense of place for your work and for the poet who really aspires to that real depth of gesture, who's really interested in going down as far deep down their own throats as possible? How important is place?
I don't think you can extract it from the work. Look at Merwin when he's in Hawaii. I mean, when I first met him, he had just come back from Mexico. He did a monograph of poems from living in a Mayan village. And he just read that when we first met. He gave me one, and I've never been able to find it. I think it was ripped off in one of the parties at the circus. It's a beautiful, it's about like this. It's about a 10 by 12 monograph, soft bound, of all of these really small little psychedelic poems about living in a Mayan village, about life in a Mayan village. They were excellent. I don't know what happened to him. But yes, his work is transformational and often a little meditational, and also imagistic, philosophical. But it always is grounded in the place. And the same with Charles Wright. You can see the place where he's in. So that's part of the poem. That's part of being alive, is loving the place that you're in. That's the way I see it. You can't extract it from the work, I don't think. It's part of it. What's his face in Camden, you know, in New Jersey?
Walt Whitman.
Yeah, Walt Whitman.
Quahogs.
You can't extract him from the eastern seaboard.
From his time.
Either. Yeah, exactly.
Right. Yeah. Can you read a poem as a final gesture that gives us a sense of place? What would you read if someone said, "I want a poem that really tastes like New Mexico"?
Well, like New Mexico. Hmm. Oh, okay.
Well, you got this here. Well, you have
the one that comes to mind when you said it. I'll read that.
All right, that's good enough. As he goes into his book stash. We're talking with Amalio Madueño about Petroglyph and his other work. Probably should ask about Migra letters, too.
Oh, Migra letters, yeah, that's the new one.
Oh, back to Lost in the Chamiso.
Well, this is the one that occurred to me when you said the first bug of spring hit the windshield, and the horizon out past the Chiricahuas was a pale slice of watermelon. I had a truck full of flagstone, dug from a road cut near El Santuario. And I was happy tired looking forward to some downtime when I felt it, like I was driving through a new world without having left the old. Then some lightning touched the ground in the west while the engine ate up the miles heading south. What's so funny?
Oh man,
that's the one that came to mind when you said that. If there was a poem that evoked my space,
well, we'll talk Migra letters next time.
Migra, okay, sure.